Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. The harpsichord, standing at the center of Baroque European culture, served not only as a musical instrument, but also as a receptacle of painting. Collections in townhouses and mansions from Venice to London and Antwerp to Paris included, alongside traditional easel paintings, harpsichords bearing works by masters as renowned as Jan Brueghel, Annibale Carracci, Noël Coppel, Christophe Huet, or Sebastiano Ricci. The paintings on harpsichord soundboards featured flowers, birds, and insects, connecting these works to Flemish still life paintings and the celebration of creation. Others presented allegorical, mythological, or vanitas scenes on their lids. In traditional paintings, the harpsichord functioned as a sign of the culture of the gentleman and life at the court, as well as a symbol of artistic inspiration. The harpsichord was indeed a total work of art and an emblem of harmony, but it was swept away by the historical breaks at the turn of the 19th century, leaving only sweet but anecdotal memories in our imagination. In this lecture, held on April 6, 2018, at the National Gallery of Art, Christine Laloux and Jean-Philippe Echard propose, using the examples of the harpsichord, an interpretation of the strong links between painting and music in the aesthetics of 16th through 18th century Europe.
Today we will take you to a journey through arts and music in Europe by presenting harpsichords of the collection of the Musée de la Musique in Paris, together with paintings. The harpsichord was of prime of importance for Western music from the 16th to the 18th century. The harpsichord is a keyboard and stringed instrument, but still quite different from a piano. Whereas the strings of the piano are harmed when the keys are pressed, the strings of the harpsichord are plucked with a tiny bit of feather. This instrument requires a specific playing technique and has a quite unique tone. This instrument was already invented in the 15th century. It was en vogue in Italy and the Flanders in the second half of the 16th century. And in the harpsichord family are also instruments of smaller sizes, such as virginals and spinets. The earliest known instruments made in France date from the second half of the 17th century, when Louis XIV, the Sun King, was King of France. It reaches its peak of popularity in the 18th century, notably in France, Germany, and England, but is then slowly replaced at the turn of the 19th century by the piano, which better allowed the expression of nuances. Numerous composers, including Frescobaldi, Scarlatti, Zwilling, Bach, Couperin, Rameau, Purcell, and Handel, wrote music for keyboard instruments, the organ, the clavichord, and the harpsichord. This resulted in an extraordinary repertory of pieces for solo harpsichord and of ensemble music in which the harpsichord provided the basso continuo part. The harpsichord is considered by many to be the most characteristic instrument of Baroque music and sometimes a symbol of aristocratic culture.
If the importance of the harpsichord as a musical instrument is indisputable, its visual appearance still is generally overlooked, though many of these instruments were finished with a lavish decoration. Harpsichord decoration is extremely varied from one instrument to another, and the parts of a single instrument can also be decorated in different ways. This afternoon, we will be considering the harpsichord primarily as an object that gives pleasure to the eyes. When you look at the wooden feet and stand of the harpsichord, this can be carved and gilded. The outside of the case can be decorated, like here, with grotesque figures on a gilded background, but it can also be, on other instruments, be lacquered in an imitation of Chinese lacquer works. the lid of the harpsichord may be composed of different wooden panels. It can be thus partially opened to access the keyboards and the tuning pegs, as it is represented in the Allegory of Hearing by Rubens and Jan Brueghel the Elder on the left hand side. It can also be fully opened for a better sound diffusion, like on the right hand side of this. The decoration of the lid is composed to adapt to these various uses. The soundboard is the large surface made of spruce and is only a few millimeters thick, so it's very thin. It is located beneath the strings and it plays a crucial role in sound projection. It receives the vibration of all the strings of the instrument and it is propagating and amplifying them so that the audience can hear the music being played. This structural element of the harpsichord is extremely important to its timbre, and it should be able to vibrate as freely as possible. It is principally for this reason that the soundboard cannot be covered with layer of panes that would prevent it from vibrating. The strong vibration of the soundboards would not in any case allow paint to adhere well anyway, and it would quickly result in damage or completely destroy a painting due to paint loss. It is generally decorated with flowers, fruits, birds, insects, and even, on this example, seashells, like shrimps, painted on the wood, whose grain remains visible. In this example, you may note the garland of flowers surrounding the gilded sound hole. So this is a sound hole where the sound goes out, and around you have a garland of flowers painted. And you have everywhere flowers, bird, for instance, here, and here are the little shrimps I mentioned. The harpsichord was a valuable object that revealed the taste of its owner and was integrated into his or her surroundings. It was, it is, a three-dimensional object that was positioned in a room in relation to other pieces of furniture. The techniques, the vocabulary, and the subject matter of the paintings decorating it were borrowed from the fine arts. A correspondence between harpsichords and easel painting resulted. These connections were aesthetic, philosophical, and social. We will first look at the harpsichord lids. Standing almost vertically when the harpsichord is open, the lid presents a flat surface that is similar to an easel painting and contrasts with the rest of the decoration. Displayed in a gallery, the open lid would rest against the wall and would thus appear to be part of a series of paintings on display in a private mansion. Lid paintings were often autonomous works of art. The composition was, of course, designed with the shape of the lid in mind. The action was placed to take advantage of the widest part of the lid on the left, which is this part. You see, when it is the widest part of the lid. They were conceived independently of the rest of the instrument and painted by artists, sometimes of great renown, chosen by the client. Because of their high quality and value, lids were sometimes the only part of harpsichords to survive, as we see in this lid painted by Annibale Carracci around 1600. This lid was removed from its instrument and adapted to become an easel painting. The parts of the lid were transformed into painted panel for hanging on a wall without changing their shape. They now hang in the National Gallery in London. Sometimes, such lids were completed to give them a rectangular shape, more conventional for easel painting. This is the case for this panel by Noël Coipel, representing the duel between Apollo and Marsyas. So Apollo is here and Marsyas is here. This painting is dated circa 1665. Careful examination of the painting indeed reveals the latter addition in the upper right corner that we evidence with a more visible sign here. Another example is this panel by Sebastiano Ricci, dated circa 1720. It represents Venus surrounded by nymphs. The Ricci brothers had an excellent reputation in 18th century France, and it is easy to imagine that an art aficionado ordered this lead painting. Ricci's reputation continued to shine for many years and decades, which would explain why this painting was preserved while the rest of the harpsichord was abandoned or destroyed. Indeed, the musical tastes, aesthetics, and repertoire changed throughout the centuries. Older instruments were not anymore adapted to play the music newly written, say, in the 18th century. This new music written in the 18th century would require more notes on the bass and on the treble sides of the keyboard, and more string sets. In some cases, older harpsichords were not abandoned, but transformed, generally being enlarged in dimensions. Namely, the esteemed harpsichords made by the Rucker's family in Antwerp until the mid-17th century were often transformed in France during the 18th century. A case in point is this harpsichord. So it was made by Johannes Rucker's in Antwerp, in the Flanders, around 1612, but it has been then modernized in France later. The original trompe-l'œil decoration, or faux marble, is still visible on the back of the instrument here. It cannot be seen when the harpsichord is placed against a wall. The new decoration on the side of the instrument facing outwards was applied in France in the 18th century. It has become semi-transparent with the aging of the paint material and allows us to distinguish the original decoration by transparency. Here, you may guess the same faux marble pattern here. Maybe you know the name impedimento, which applies here. For the lid, it was preferred when modernizing the instrument to preserve the original Flemish painting by completing and enlarging the composition to adapt the lid to the now larger dimensions of the instrument. Indeed, among French amateurs in the 18th century, there was still a great interest for Flemish painting. Notably, the two paintings of this lid were attributed in the past to Jan Brueghel the Elder or to Van Balen. The taste for Flemish and Dutch painting was so strong that it led to copies and pastiche. Here, on the left-hand side, you see the very end or tail of the harpsichord. And the very tiny scene represents or features a bagpipe player, and it was clearly inspired by the painting of David Teniers, which you see on the right-hand side. His bagpipe player, Teniers' bagpipe player, exhibits indeed striking similarity. It is dated circa 1635 and is now part of the collection of the Musée du Louvre.
Compositions similar in size to easel paintings decorated large harpsichord leads. But what did they represent? We will touch on several recurring themes of special importance. In keeping with one of the reigning genres in the fine arts, the first will be mythological subjects, which call to mind the arts and beauty. Earlier, we looked at a portrayal of Venus in a painting by Ricci. The goddess was indeed very often associated with music in Italian art. For instance, this 1531 Trecentino harpsichord, now at the Wallach College of Music in London, shows a reclining Venus on the inside of the lid. This Venus with a cupid reminds us of this painting of Titian, where Venus is represented with a cupid and an organist, thus associating this goddess again with music. Apollo and the Muses were of course frequently painted as well. These figures appear on the harpsichord built by a preeminent instrument maker, Giovanni Antonio Baffo, around 1574. The lead painting shows Apollo on Mount Parnassus with the Muses in a widely used iconographic model. The success of this iconographic model may have been promoted by engravings such as the one by Giorgio Ghisi after composition by Luca Penny. So, two conceptions of beauty are represented by the figures of Venus and Apollo. One is more sensual, linked to the five senses. The other is more intellectual and addresses the mind. This last conception is referenced when the figure of Minerva, the goddess of wisdom, appears together with Apollo, as on the lid of one of the Rucus harpsichords of the Musée de la Musique. Her presence here on the left-hand side of the composition further emphasizes the intellectual aspect of music, which was ruled by Apollo. Conversely, Apollo playing viola or lyra is opposed to Marsyas, the flute-playing faun, on this other harpsichord lid. The two figures differ in very way. Apollo's beauty and his balanced posture contrast with the monstrousness of the faun, whose body is further deformed by his flute playing. I couldn't resist also showing you this marvelous painting by Jan van den Hoek on the same subject, the duality in music. It promotes the development of the idea of music as well thought out and measured rather than instinctive and animalistic. Apollo is always shown with an instrument that accompanies his singing and poetry, the Greek logos or word. This helps us to understand how subjects were chosen and the numerous symbolic meanings of the images painted on the very instrument on which the structure of music was based in the Baroque era. The poet Orpheus, inspired by the gods, plays music able to charm even wild animals, like in this study of four harpsichord lead drawn in the workshop of Charles Lebrun. The emotional power of music was also recognized. It spoke directly to the soul. The harpsichord, whose painted subjects often explored the relationships between poetry and music, served to unite the arts. Through its nature as a musical instrument, the harpsichord added instrumental music to the arts.
The harpsichord soundboard, on the other hand, explored an entirely and resolutely different genre, that of still life painting. Partially hidden under the strings, as we said, the soundboard was decorated in a very specific way, always the same, whether in a Flemish or a French instrument. As we said, no preparatory undercoat was used to make the wood opaque, to mask it, which would have also increased the weight of the soundboard and which would have been detrimental for the sound of the instrument. So we have a sprinkling of cut flowers, fruit, birds, and insects. And while the disposition of all these painted objects changed over time, goldfinches and other songbirds were often part of the decoration. Flowers were chosen according to the client's taste, and including tulips, anemones, buttercups, carnations, roses, hyacinths, etc., etc., and fritillaries. I love fritillaries. References to the still life genre are immediately obvious. The flower motifs allude to the floral compositions, bouquet and wreath that appear in the painting of the Northern School, especially when you see like a cut flower like this laying on a flat surface. It reminds of cut flower like this painted on a flat surface. The painted objects were more than simple motifs, and the entire vocabulary of the still life was used. Flowers and fruits from every season, in different state of being, from the rosebud to the faded flower, all together, which allude to the various stages of life. All the elements of Vanitas painting were included on soundboards, both in the Flanders and in France. They reminded the viewer of the passage of time and the fragility of life. In the careful rendering of each motif, one can discern an attention to detail, or perhaps a kind of fascination, reminiscent of the interest in botany. The flowers painted on soundboards, it almost looks as if they have just been laid down there. These flowers are reminiscent of the naturalistic plates of artists like Jacob Marel, and in France, Nicolas Robert, Daniel Rabel, and Jean Joubert. These plates, like an example is shown on the left-hand side, these plates were made with water-based paint and vellum, ordered by flower enthusiasts who were especially interested in the famous tulip bulbs that were brought and sold in large quantity. They were paper gardens that called to mind the gardens of Louis XIII's brother Gaston d'Orléans at the Château of Blois, Le Grand Condé in Chantilly, and Louis XIV's in Versailles. By displaying this type of painting, which was both intellectual and artistic, harpsichords carried a reference to cultured art lovers, the type of person who owned Cabinet de Curiosité, and to their strong interest in things from the world of nature, known as naturalia. References to nature were also present in art books, which included plates of this type. In the book named La Guirlande de Julie, Julie's Garland, which is one of these books, we show here the most famous plate of this book. And aside, a very delicately painted garland around a flower on one of the spinets, which is in the collection in Paris. A reference to preciousness. The word preciousness refers to the précieux and précieuse, like in the play by Molière, Les Précieuses Ridicules. So this reference to preciousness was expressed through the use of bouquets and flower garlands painted around the sound holes of the harpsichord, like here. Many birds were also scattered among the flowers and fruits. Some compositions on the harpsichords are directly related to the Northern Schools, like this detail from the harpsichords by Nicolas Dumont in the Paris collection. The howl depicted here is holding in its claws a rolled music sheet. You may guess it is here. While some birds, some other birds, known as songbirds, are painted around. This scene has some strong correspondences with paintings, such as this bird's concert by Melchior de Hondecoeter, now in the collection of the Gemälde Gallery in Dresden, Germany. What could indeed be more obvious, more natural, than associating birds with a musical instrument? It is no accident, indeed, that most, if not all, of those birds depicted on harpsichords are songbirds or birds like parrots that mimic sounds made by others. These birds symbolize the sense of hearing, of music, or both, and reminded the viewer of nature not only through their painted images, but also through the allusion to their song. Bird images summed up the great philosophical question of how to imitate nature. Whether associated with a musical instrument in a painted or painted on a harpsichord, birds introduce the theme of music in nature as compared to man-made music played on an instrument. Birds painted on harpsichords set up the comparison between birdsong and the song of musical instrument. Developments in instrument building and musical composition together led to the writing of descriptive of imitative keyboard pieces. Harpsichordists play trills, so which is a rapid alternation between two neighboring notes on the keyboard. And they played also other effects, which clearly imitated birdsong. Composers like Couperin and Rameau wrote many pieces that include these ornaments and whose titles are unambiguous. Le Rossignol, the nightingale, La Poule, the hen, Le Coucou, no need translating. Decorative and pictorial bird motifs were frequently painted on 18th century harpsichords in the area between the jack rail. So the jack rail is like some piece of the mechanism to where to plug the string. Between the jack rail and the sound hole, like you see a bit here. So this area is often decorated with bird. Wild birds on early harpsichords were placed so that a spectator could see them. Here, on the right-hand side example, on this 18th century French instrument, they face the musician at the keyboard. The bird image, firmly anchored in the 18th century, referred to nature in a variety of ways. Not only is the bird singing, it is also perched on a tree, of which only the trunk remains. The tree could symbolize the wood used to build the harpsichord itself. As this motif is painted on the soundboard, which is, as we know, the part of the instrument that produces the sound. The image of a bird may also contain a reference to melody, an important 18th century debate whose two main protagonists were the philosophers Jean-Jacques Rousseau and the composer Jean-Philippe Rameau, addressed the supremacy of melody over harmony.
Now that we have had a close look at harpsichords and examined their paintings as related to the field of fine arts, it's quite tempting to move on to paintings in order to observe harpsichords in an aesthetic context. What music lover has not gazed at a Dutch genre scene with the secret wish to plunge into a lost world that seems so near at hand? Music is very often present in these paintings, and a variety of musical practices are depicted. Musical instruments are reproduced with apparent precision. In the paintings by Frans van Mieris, the name of the builder appears on the name board, The signature is on this piece of wood. And in Steam's painting, however, the number features the painter's name. So perhaps it's a joke. Instrument builders and painters of the Northern European schools were certainly part of the same artistic milieu and often belonged to the same guilds. In Antwerp, both belonged to the Guild of Saint-Luc, where they would have met and mixed. It's easy to imagine that painters could have redecorated harpsichords as well as depicting them in their paintings. The harpsichord and musical instruments in general were a common theme in scenes that gave the feeling of capturing a moment of everyday life. The music lesson, the famous painting by Jan Vermeer, shows two instruments, the virginal, the keyboard, and the viol. There is a contrast of shapes. The viol is all curves, while the virginal is all white angles, and the duality of appearances, the virginal is covered with a multitude of decorations, materials, and motifs, all of them matte. Whereas the wood of the viol is varnished all over in a sort of monochromatic glaze that is transparent and shiny. There is also a duality of sound. The keyboard instrument has plucked metal strings, whereas the viol, whose gut strings are played with a bow, enabling the musician to create expressive dynamics and prolong the sound. A formal reading of the painting can be combined with an analysis of the materials and sounds the client may have had in mind when he ordered or bought the work. The canvas overflows with references that showcase the client's lifestyle and cultivation. A reading or decoding of the scene results in a level of understanding that goes beyond the merely anecdotal. In France, the harpsichord is also the instrument of inspiration, which accompanies the composer as he or she writes music. Here we see the composers Elisabeth Jacquet-Laguerre, a French composer in 17th century, and Jean-Philippe Rameau in the 18th century, probably at his harpsichord made by Hemsch. The harpsichord was an harmonic instrument, an instrument that symbolized accord and agreement in both intimate and family settings. Music wasn't a pastime, but an intellectual art that could be mastered through education. Instrumental music was one of the tenets of knowing how to love well. People belonging to polite society were shown exercising the art of music, like in the portraits of the family de Franqueville by Jean-François de Troyes. But harpsichord playing was not limited to soloists. The use of the instrument for basso continuo occurred alongside the rise of orchestras and regular concerts in private mansions. The harpsichord took its place in rooms that were designed for collective music making and served as a social marker. It was a component of lavish receptions whose scope was not only artistic, but social and political as well. The instrument became a prestige object, exhibited and represented in paintings such as La Famille No, the family No, it's the name of the family, attributed to Jean-Baptiste Oudry and kept in a private collection. The harpsichord no longer simply served as a mirror of nature. It was also a worldly object. It was an indispensable part of the salon, which after the court was the center of cultural life. Successfully combining the arts, The harpsichord was part of the domain of visual arts as well as that of music. Its decoration reflected the taste of the amateur music lover, which could change over time. It alluded to and represented the environment of the kind of people who owned a cabinet de curiosité and to the perception of nature. As a musical instrument, the harpsichord not only made it possible to look within oneself in a small private space, but also served as a ceremonial object in court. As part of an aesthetic universe that brought together poetry, music, and the fine arts, it bore witness to philosophical and aesthetic questions as well. We now reach the end of our journey through arts and music. We thank you for your attention and propose to conclude with music played on this very harpsichord in the auditorium of the Musée de la Musique. The talented Jean Rondeau plays the Prelude and Fugue in A minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.